CataractCoach.com, podcast 38 with Mohammed Sayed.
Today's podcast features our guest, Dr. Mohammed Sayed. He is a great surgeon, very talented, and we first saw his video on Cataract Coach way back when, video number 665, about 4 years ago. And in that video, he decided to get the flexible foot plate of an Ahmed glaucoma seton valve device folded in half and then make a tiny pyridomy. So instead of making a large 3 clock hour pyridomy, he made a very small pyridomy and folded the implant in half, put it in the pocket, and sutured in the pocket. I thought it was brilliant, and you should watch that video. Again, it's 665. I since watched him do other cases, very interesting cases, complicated cases, challenging cases, difficult cases, and he's truly a magnificent surgeon. But then when I got to know him, I was even more impressed. And what I like so much about him is his drive and determination and hard work. Imagine, he's growing up and he goes to medical school and doesn't even know where or what he's going to do. He gets a residency program by some stroke of luck, but mostly by hard work. And then he decides he wants to become an ophthalmologist trained in the U.S. And what's the best program in the U.S. year after year for in terms of rankings? The Bascom-Palmer Eye Institute in Miami. So he comes, does a research fellowship, another research fellowship. He wants to do cataract, anterior segment glaucoma, but the opportunity initially is oculoplastics. So he does that, but incorporates some thinking into that. So he does research with a glaucoma agent, prostaglandins, and see how they affect orbital volume, orbital fat loss. Smart. He parlays that into the pediatric fellowship. And during the pediatric fellowship, again, specializing more in pediatric glaucomas. Then he does a glaucoma fellowship. Incredible amount of training. He's such an amazing young doctor that Bascom-Palmer Eye Institute asked him to join his faculty. So he joined his faculty there. Imagine, he's in his home halfway across the planet, finished med school years ago, and did he ever imagine to be faculty at the Bascom-Palmer Eye Institute? He does that for a while. He does private practice in Miami. Then he decides he wants to be involved with Moorfields, probably the number one name in ophthalmology in the UK, and they have a branch in the United Arab Emirates. And he decides he's going to move there. And he becomes a very successful ophthalmologist there. So it's an amazing story. If you are a big dreamer in some remote part of the world, and you have these high hopes, all you need is the drive and determination, hard work, and you too can achieve just like Mohammed Sayed. Check out the podcast. I think you'll really enjoy it. He's such a wonderful guy. We filmed this in person. I visited him at his home in Dubai while I was there for the EPOMEC meeting, which is Evolving Practice of Ophthalmology Middle East Conference. That was November of 2023. Check it out. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today I have an interview with an ophthalmologist I met after he sent me a video, Mohammed Sayed, who was practicing before in Miami at Bascom-Palmer in a private practice, and now is here in Dubai doing the full spectrum of anterior segment surgery, but especially cataract and glaucoma surgery. And the video that you sent, which blew me away, was such a common sense idea, which was using a smaller incision to implant the foot plate of a glaucoma seton device. And you used a smaller incision because you said, well, the device is flexible, just fold it in half. It was a clear path.
Correct.
So tell me about how you got the idea first, and then we'll get into your whole path and your background. But I just thought it was brilliant, such a simple idea. We'll make a smaller pyridomy.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Uday, for having me. I follow you avidly. Cataract Coach is my number one entertainment source. And, I watch every video every day, and I'm subscribed to the website. I get the emails daily in my inbox. And I want to tell everybody that actually the website itself has a lot of features that are not in YouTube by itself. Sure. So make sure that you subscribe to CataractCoach.com mailing list. And it's a pleasure having you here in Dubai. I finally met you after so many
back and forth communications, emails.
Encounters.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm happy to be here with you. I'm honored.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, I was really amazed. I get at Cataract Coach, we get 30 to 50 videos sent in a week. It's a lot of videos. But that video, the second I saw it, I just thought, gosh, that is a brilliant idea. Why didn't I think of that?
Right. So it's an old idea. So some people would, you know, back in the days, they would like cut the wings of the Barville tube and then like, you know, fold the Barville tube, even though it was not a flexible material. It's much harder to fold. But, you know, it's not a brand new idea. But I have to give credit to Indir Pal Singh, who I actually saw a video of his doing this with the clear path. And then, like, everybody does their own little modification.
Sure.
And I've seen so many modifications of that technique, but I have to give credit to Pal Singh.
Yeah, we keep evolving the techniques. You start with, like, you see someone operate, and say, you know, that's a great idea, but I'd probably do this little change, and then someone does the same, and the techniques keep evolving.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So tell me about your path in ophthalmology, because it's very interesting, because you have a experience, obviously, in a lot of anterior segment surgery, and multiple fellowships, glaucoma, and pediatrics, so you can handle some more. I think the toughest glaucoma cases ever are these pediatric ones, so you've got an expertise in all the above.
Correct. So my path to ophthalmology, you know, I'm a native of Egypt, and I graduated in medical school in Alexandria. I wanted to be an ophthalmologist when the first lecture in ophthalmology, I was sold.
Nice.
And I wouldn't do anything else. And I unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, wasn't able to secure an ophthalmology residency in my hometown. And traveled for her observerships.
Sure.
All around Moorfields Hospital in London, Bascom-Palmer in Miami. And I was doing an observership in Bascom-Palmer, and I meet an ophthalmologist who works in Saudi Arabia. And he tells me there is this program in Saudi Arabia, the residency program in Saudi Arabia, and for the first time they are going to accept a non-Saudi applicant. And
I mean, residency spots in the U.S. are competitive. But for our American listeners, you might realize outside the U.S., it's far more competitive.
It's very competitive. So I remember, like, hundreds of applicants for, like, you know, four or five spots. That's, on par with, like, the most competitive in the U.S.
Sure.
And I applied to that program, and I got in, and I worked in Saudi Arabia in a chain of private eye hospitals alongside my residency training. They sponsored me for it. And after I finished, even though my contract with them was for me to stay on the staff of the hospital for a number of years before I can go anywhere else, Dr. Alaa Al-Dinosauri, who is one of my heroes, I told him, listen, I really want to go to the U.S. to pursue fellowship training. Mm-hmm. And he said, go ahead. And I went to Bascom-Palmer. I was a research fellow initially in oculoplastics, which I never wanted to do. But, you know, international graduates, like, you know, whatever.
You take what you can get.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but interesting, even when you did the oculoplastics, you were involved with a research study that was related to glaucoma.
Correct.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so my oculoplastics mentor, her name is Wendy Lee, who I love.
At Bascom, yeah.
At Bascom-Palmer. She was working on a project to, see the fat
atrophy
of in patients who are started on prostaglandin analogs, prostaglandin periorbitopathy. So we were recruiting patients from Dr. Richard Lee's clinic, who's one of the glaucoma faculty in Bascom-Palmer, and he's the closest mentor to my heart, and the one who helped me a lot, and is still helping me till today. And so I told him, so she told me, Dr. Richard Lee is, you know, he will need you to be on top of things. Like, you know, if he like texts you to come see a patient or like, you know, can send them and take pictures or whatever, you
go right away.
So Dr. Richard Lee, every time he would text me, hey, I have a patient who I'm going to start on processing analogs, and I told him about the study, you know, come consent them. And I would be there in like a minute or two. And I felt that he really appreciated the fact that I was, I had a good work ethic, I was on top of it. And
sure, because he has a really busy clinic, and he just can't have the patient sitting there waiting for a long period of time. He wants it done now.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that
for
was
sure.
That was the case. And so I got the patients out of the room right away. And I approached him and I told him, you know what, I really want to do research with you in glaucoma. And I ended up doing three more years of research with Dr. Richard Lee.
Wow. Probably had a number of publications then.
Yeah, I had a very good number of publications in my first year. I think we published 8 or something, and like, you know, every year
wow,
we would publish 7 or 8.
For sure.
And you know, I think that I did a, you know, it was some of the best time of my life, like learning from Richard Lee on the professional side, on the personally as well, work ethic. I can't express enough how grateful I am to him. And then, you know, he knew that I wanted to do a glaucoma fellowship.
So more clinical then, less research.
Yes, yes. So I was doing like, you know, I was 4 years, you know, a research fellow for 4 years, like, you know, with no surgery. And, like, you know, I felt my hands.
Your hands get rusty.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult at the time to get into the glaucoma fellowship at Bascom-Palmer. It's a very competitive
program. Oh, it's one of the very best in the whole U.S.
Yeah, it's considered, like, you know, one of the top two. It's always, like, you know, they talk about Duke, Bascom-Palmer, like,
sure.
You know, it's the top glaucoma fellowships amongst, like, you know, many other great programs. But it was not easy. And so one of Dr. Lee's ideas was to... you know, for me to like do something related to glaucoma, maybe pediatric glaucoma. And
sure.
So I applied for a pediatric ophthalmology fellowship and I got accepted. But during my pediatric ophthalmology fellowship, rather than focusing solely on strabismus, I worked with Peter Chang, who's another hero of mine.
Over peds glaucoma.
Yes.
Right.
So Peter is also dual trained pediatric ophthalmology and glaucoma, even though he trained in glaucoma first.
Mm.
You know, he was doing the most complex, he gets referrals from all around the world, basically, for his expertise in pediatric anterior segment surgery and pediatric glaucoma. I learned so much from him. Then, you know, the following year, I applied again to the clinical glaucoma fellowships, but this time I had, you know, some data, clinical,
sure,
you know, work backing me up, and with the support of Peter and Richard, I got in the Bascom-Palmer Glaucoma Fellowship as one of the 4 fellows, and this was an amazing year. I learned so much.
Sure.
But I learned as much in my first year or two and on my own.
Yeah, that's ultimately the acid test, is that, you know, it's amazing to have great training and great mentors and people right next to you in the operating theater, operating room. But when you get there on your own, and your own clinic, and there's no one to your left, no one to your right, it's all on your shoulders.
Yeah, you
learn by doing.
You get in trouble, and then you look around, you figure out you're the most senior person in the OR. And
right?
You have to deal with it. Yeah, so...
I mean, there's, we always say on cataract, there's a lot more learning. In the first couple years in practice, you'll learn more than you did in the previous 10 years.
And let me tell you, so if anybody asks me who taught you cataract surgery, I tell them Oday Divgan. And initially they think that you actually taught me, like, you know, in person, and they get very impressed. Oh, really? And how? Like, was he in Miami or did you go to LA?
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's like just the internet, but it's just I never missed a video. And every time I'm doing a case, I'm remembering something that Oday had said.
Yeah.
Pivot in the incision. Viscoelastic cheaper than vitreous. Don't make a baby rexus.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, get the nucleus out. So, like, so many things that, you know, your teachings have been invaluable. not to a small number of residents every year, but to thousands of like ophthalmologists around the world. And I think that this, you know, like you changed the face of cataract surgery learning around the world.
You.
And I'm being very honest here, and very genuinely, I think. You know, that after cataract coach, cataract surgery training is no longer the same.
Yeah, we continue to learn from each other. I mean, I just came last weekend from a meeting in Hyderabad, India, where there were some amazing presentations on MSICS, so manual small incision cataract surgery. And I learned things in that meeting that are going to refine my technique of this procedure. So I think that's the neat part is that, you know, we keep learning and we keep evolving. And obviously, the way you and I are going to do surgery 10 years from now, it's not what we're doing
different now.
So we've got to keep evolving, got to keep learning.
That's very true. That's very true. I was, we have a text group for my co-fellows and I.
Sure.
And we keep sending, cases and videos and ask each other about, the cases that we do. And even though we had the exact same rotations, we were trained by the exact same attendings.
Right.
Every one of us is doing something completely different from the other person.
Yeah.
And all of us are doing something that we had never learned in fellowship.
Right.
So, and we didn't graduate that long ago. It's 5-6 years ago. So.
Right. I mean, extrapolate a little bit more. I'm obviously older. You know, when I finished my residency in 2000, none of these things existed. There was no lamellar corneal transplantation, there was no OCT machine, there was no anti-VEGF compounds, there was no MIGS, there was no EDOF lenses. None of these things even existed.
Absolutely.
So you've got to learn and keep learning as you go, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, the beauty too is I've got to give credit to Bob Osher, the godfather of surgical videos, who when I used to borrow his VHS tapes when I was a resident in the late 1990s, but by watching it on video, boy, we can compress that learning curve. You know, one of the videos I showed when I was in India was about phaco wound burns. And I have had ophthalmology residents send me a video and say, look, here's a case where I saw that smoke sign where the phaco tip is clogged, so you give a little bit of energy, it pulverizes the lens material, but it doesn't aspirate it, so it looks like smoke in the AC.
Correct.
And he knows, hey, he stopped, pulled out of the eye, and the tip was blocked, and he saved that patient. So watching that video, the phaco wound burn, he remembered it. And that 2 minutes he spent watching that video saved his patient a lifetime of irregular astigmatism.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So yeah, it's really neat that we keep learning from each other. In fact, here at this meeting, with this the big EPOMEC meeting, Evolving Practice of Ophthalmology Middle East Conference, which is gonna be in the next couple of days, all my talks are purely video.
Right.
I don't have a single PowerPoint slide.
Yeah, and this brings us to the importance of actually recording every case.
Even
if you don't feel comfortable showing it to the world.
Yeah.
But recording every case and studying your own surgical videos and like you always say, being your own, toughest critic.
Right.
Will make you learn much quicker than you would if you don't record your cases and watch them. I make sure that I record every single case that I do.
Right. And yeah, you may not save that recording if it's a routine case, but yeah, and important to be your own toughest critic. There's a funny joke that I heard. I just relate to it so well. The joke is someone tells you, okay, we'll give you $50, but the person you hate the most gets $100. Are you game for that? And the answer is, of course, why wouldn't I want $150? because sometimes I just hate myself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I think I learned a lot from my mistakes. I learned a lot from you commenting on my mistakes, even though you're like always, you say it in a way that like, okay, oh, you did a great job, but like, you should have done this here, you should have done this there. But I feel like, sharing complications is not really, like we all get complications. If we don't share our complications, how are people going to learn how to avoid them?
Right. Well, how are we going to learn? I showed a case at one of my meetings where I have, loose zonules, I put the viscoelastic, then I put the CTR in, and then some of the cortex of stuff is stuck in place because of the CTR. And one of the people who's discussing the case to me, she says, well, you should just, when you put the viscoelastic, why didn't you visco-dissect off the cortex? I'm like, yeah, why didn't I do that? That would have made so much more sense. Right. So the little things, to have other people help kind of critique it and give you advice, it makes us all better. And complications happen. Just we're showing you a case today earlier that I published on Cata Coach, a video 1990, so about 3-4 weeks ago, where I'm just doing cortex removal on that round, smooth, silicone plastic IA tip, the polymer tip. The capsule pops open, and I don't know why. But then how to recover from that? So like you said, we all get complications. The only surgeons who don't get complications are those
who don't operate.
Or they
lie about it.
Or not fully truthful, right. And so we all get complications, but to be able to like recover like that case, as soon as it happened, I was a little shocked, but hey, I knew what to do. And by some stroke of good luck and good practice, anterior hyaloid phase stayed intact. No vitreous prolapse, very securely placed sulcus lens with optic capture. Patient had a beautiful outcome. And never needs a YAG laser capsulotomy now.
Awesome. Yeah. So I learned so much from Cataract Coach, from your own videos, of course, and like your teachings, but also from all the thing, the residents.
Yeah.
For years you have published videos of residents, anonymous residents, sure, that were operating, kind of struggling with steps, and how you kind of instructed them to get out of trouble or stay out of trouble and finish the case beautifully. Those were invaluable. In every case, every case that I do until yesterday was operating. Every case that I do, I remember an advice of yours that I watched or heard on Cataract Coach, and I apply it, and it saves me from getting in trouble.
Yeah, those resident cases, even if you're in practice, are so helpful to learn from. Today's video is a resident's first anterior vitrectomy.
Correct.
And popping the capsule open, and then the manager
struggling with the
viscoelastic.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because the trick is you got to inject the viscoelastic, but then at some point you got to take your foot off the infusion, otherwise you're just pushing all the viscoelastic back out of the eye. Correct. And this poor resident, he or she ends up going through multiple tubes of viscoelastic before that kind of sets in. But it's like learning this now will shorten your learning curve.
Absolutely. When you see it, you know how to deal with it.
Right. It rings a bell. Hey, I've seen this before.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that.
So you did a research fellowship in plastics, research fellowship in glaucoma, clinical fellowship in peds, clinical fellowship in glaucoma as well. And then what'd you do?
Then I joined Bascom Palmer as a faculty member. I was 4 days a week in a satellite in Naples, which is like a two-hour drive from Miami.
And Naples is far. So Miami's on the east coast of Florida. Naples is already on the west coast of Florida.
Yeah.
You got to cross the whole state.
Right. So I rented an apartment, and I remember in Naples, my wife and my son, he was just newly born, they had to live in Miami because my wife was a starting gastroenterology resident. Gastroenterology fellow. And I rented an apartment in Naples, but I was so attached to my newborn that, I was like, okay, I'm not going to miss a night with my son. I'm going to have to drive back and forth from Miami to Naples and then back every day.
That's like 4 hours of driving or more.
That's 4 hours of driving or more. That's like almost 5 hours or like 4 hours, 45 every single day. And I got so burnt out.
I bet.
And, I really wanted to move to Miami. I couldn't move to the Bascom Palmer main site. And I decided to join private practice. Initially, I joined a private equity owned practice. Mm-hmm. And in that private equity-owned practice, there are several models, and there are several practices that are owned by the same private equity group. I was working the most in an HMO, practice in an underserved part of Miami, and it was the best training that I had because it was the toughest cases. It was all the cases that were neglected or immigrants that had no health care for decades and then
So really advanced disease.
really advanced disease, black cataracts, terrible glaucoma that doesn't respond to anything. You know, cases of combined cataracts and glaucoma, like the corneas are very, like, you know, opaque and scarred. Losanials, neovascular glaucoma, all with cataracts and terrible diabetic retinopathy, cataracts with vitreous hemorrhage in the back, and so on and so forth. So
a great opportunity to not only help countless patients who are desperate for care, but boy, it challenged your skills to the max.
Absolutely. So I think that, I was never confident in my skill as much as I was after finishing a year working in that place, because I really did some of the toughest cases.
Right.
You know, and after that, like, you know, my confidence level just, you know, I don't want it to go up to a level where, you know, like, it's dangerous. But, you know, I think that at that point, I never turned away a patient.
Right.
And
yeah, we're talking about the learning curve. And so you get to the point where, like, you're actively seeking out the challenging ones. I'll take them.
Right.
The really tough case, I'll take it.
Correct. And right. And until now, like, you know, I kind of find enjoyment in right. Doing the tougher cases. But that year kind of, like, you know, really polished my skill to a great degree. And I'm even though it was not an environment that I really wanted to, like, you know, spend the rest of my career in.
Sure.
But I'm really grateful that I ended up doing that year, because it really made a difference in my skill level. After that, you know, my wife had finished her fellowship, and we decided to move to an area north of Miami called Vero Beach. I joined a great private practice, and I was doing the full range of things. It was the most efficient private practice I have seen. We were doing, like, I was doing, like, 30-plus cases, like, you know, finishing by 3 p.m., like, with, like, 5-6, like, glaucoma tubes, like, you know, 20 cataracts, 25, and, like, you know, with a
bunch of MIGs,
lenses,
probably, yeah.
MIGs, and, you know, like, combined, and, like, you know, so many of these, like, old premium lenses and stuff. So I, you know, like, you know, kind of, like, the big volume of cases in those 2 years working in that practice. Then, you know, we are originally from Egypt, and I wanted to give my son an Arabian flavor, if you want to say.
Sure.
And I felt that I also wanted to give back to, like, you know, to the Middle East, where I originally come from.
Sure. The big need.
There is a big need, and I feel that the service that we provide is invaluable, because there are a lot of people who would otherwise need to travel internationally to find a fellowship trained ophthalmologist.
Sure.
So, you know, my colleagues and I in Moorfields, Dubai, you know, I think that we do a great community service, and you know, reason being, we're all fellowship trained, Western fellowship trained, and you know, bring to the area some expertise that is much needed.
And while you're here in Dubai, you have patients from basically many other countries coming in to see you.
Absolutely. So there are other, like, you know, Gulf countries, you know, like, they don't have, like, you know, the, you know, ophthalmologists who have the subspecialist expertise. They send all their cases to us. In addition, you know, like, Dubai is a hub for medical tourism.
Sure.
So we get a lot of patients from Africa, from Asia. And the locals and the expats who live in Dubai as well, and the larger United Arab Emirates. So I think that, you know, I still do very complex cases, mm-hmm. You know, cases that are referred from outside the country or from within. You know, I think that we also have an obligation towards the ophthalmic fraternity in the UAE. We, you know, often hold courses to teach them, like, you know, what we know and the newest, you know,
sure.
techniques and devices in the market and medications and things. So I think that, you know, I'm really happy at this point with the service that I'm providing, and it gives a great sense of fulfillment.
It's interesting. You kind of had to go through all those steps to build up that expertise and then go into practice in Miami where you were super busy and learned in those underserved communities. And that just all kind of honed your skills to the point where, like, yeah, now here in Dubai, you can do, like, incredibly challenging cases. I mean, I've seen some of your videos that are just, wow. Those are, I look at that video and I think, that surgery would take, like, a week or two off my life.
Yeah, yeah.
It's stressful.
Yeah, and patients don't realize that, by the way. Oh. Many of them don't. Like, you know, that it actually takes a...
The stress,
Yeah. It can get very stressful. But I learned from you as well on how to manage, you know, your stress levels.
You gotta stay calm, absolutely.
Stay calm. I did actually, measure my pulse.
The heart rate monitor,
Yeah, and I stay calm. I stay calm. I learned that from you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I publish all these things because these are the things I learned the hard way.
Right.
And I had great mentors too. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. We all learn from each other. We always have great mentors. But yeah, ultimately, just take some time to settle in. Like, okay, the best is to come. Or the case I talked about earlier where I'm doing cortex removal and capsule breaks. Just no issue at all. Immediately go from vacuum down to position one just for irrigation. Get the viscoelastic. She hands it over. Start to inject the viscoelastic, go to position zero, inject more, and more, and then come out of the eye, and yeah, recover the case. But early in my career, I would have panicked. I wouldn't have been the same. Back when I had no gray hair, it would have been a different story. And so, yeah, you kind of learn as we get, you know, go further and further. And also, the other we talked about today earlier was about, gosh, the ability to compartmentalize.
Correct.
When I was younger, I mean, stresses at home or personal life or whatever other nonsense stresses you have in your life, those would end up affecting, at least to a small degree, my surgeries or my surgery day. As I'm doing surgery, a lot of things going through my mind. But now I'm so good that, like, literally no matter what else is happening, when I'm in the operating room, it's just me and this patient and this surgery, and that's it. Everything else is compartmentalized.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, it's always very useful when, like, you hear a mentor talking about these things because... we learn so much more than just surgery or medicine.
Sure.
We learn how to cope with stress. We learn how to, mm-hmm. like, you know, compartmentalize and separate our, like, you know, personal lives from, like, what we do. We learn how to talk with patients. Earlier today, we were talking about, like, you know, good lines, that we use with patients sometimes and, like, you know, that are very genuine, but, right. like, you know, that we learn from our mentors. So
yeah, right.
Do you mind sharing a couple?
Oh, there are a lot of fun ones. I mean, first, explain to any patient things that you find obvious, which is, well, the result of your surgery is kind of equal parts my surgery, my technique, my technology, and your tissue, your anatomy, and your healing. I need them both.
Right.
And when you come there and you've got that patient who's 96 years old with really terrible tissues and bad protoplasm and weak anatomy and a limited healing response and you're thinking you're going to have a great outcome, it really doesn't matter what your surgery is.
Absolutely.
So with patients, they kind of have to understand that. The other one, too, is patients are always saying, you know, they compare the one eye to the other eye. First, when they do this back and forth, I say, stop, don't do that. That prevents the brain from syncing the images. You don't want to do that. And there's validation there.
Yeah.
And then also, your eyes are sisters, not identical twins.
That's a great one. Yeah, I love that one. That's a great one.
So these are all kind of, we learn other things but along the way, but it's an easy way of explaining it to patients. That they get, yeah, my eyes are sisters, not identical twins. I mean, you've seen it with the lens calcs, right? We know IOLs come in half diopter steps. And you see, you look at the two calcs for the eyes, and one eye you put in this the same part of lens, it calcs out to perfect plane or emmetropia. And then the other eye calcs out to, okay, minus a quarter. Well, you can kind of tell the difference.
I heard a bad one, though, if you don't mind.
Oh, tell me.
So now we have removed the cataract in your lens. Now we need to go back to remove the cataract behind the lens.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it's important for patients to understand all these things. And I think, you know, even when you have a patient with a complicated issue and slow healing or a complication, as long as the patient understands that whatever it takes, I'm here to help you. And so I understand this isn't the outcome we wanted, whatever the issue there is. Let's work together and make this happen. Here's what we can do. So as long as the patient knows and they feel in their heart that you're going to be by their side and not abandon them, they'll go along with whatever you need because they know you have their best interest at heart.
Absolutely.
So yeah, all little lessons we learn along the way. And you know, it's interesting when you do our training, we're so concerned with like the surgical part of the technique part, but a lot of it actually is just the patient interaction part, which actually takes some time to develop.
So let me ask you, Uday.
Sure.
What did you learn from teaching residents? Like, you know, how many residents were there in the UCLA program every year?
So I did it for 22 years, and there were usually 8 a year.
8 a year. So, like, you, like, taught 8 residents a year how to do cataract surgery for 22 years.
Right.
In person, apart from the thousands that you teach online. But what did this teach you? How do you reflect on that?
It taught me a lot of things. First, that, you know, we all come with different personalities, different abilities, and probably the most important thing is how hungry are you? How badly do you want it? How hard are you going to work? An example I give is anyone can learn to throw 10 basketball free throws in a row. And if I say, okay, I'll give you $1 million, you got to sink 10 basketball free throws in a row. Now, I'm not that good at basketball, but I would practice every night for months, and I will be able to do it. Someone who comes with more athletic or better skills right off the bat could probably practice for a week and do it. But the catch is, we both can achieve it. You know what, same goes for surgery. There are some residents, you see them operating like, wow, you're just a natural. It's just almost no effort, and you're just so good at certain things. And you see other residents who struggle more. But I assure you, at the end, they can all achieve the same metrics or milestones if they put in the work that's required for them. And so we have to get out of the thinking of like, well, you said I had to, you know, go practice for 3 hours in the wet lab, I did it. Well, that wasn't the point, it wasn't 3 hours. I want you to be able to throw 10 sutures of 10 or nylon in 10 minutes. 10, 10, 10. And if that takes you 3 hours to learn, great. If it takes you 30 hours, great. If it takes you 300 hours, great. But you gotta learn.
Because you know what, Uday? I'm on all these Facebook groups for young ophthalmologists in the Middle East. And there is this, like, you know, very common theme. My cataract surgery is terrible. Like, you know, I'm getting complications. I think I should do a non-surgical subspecialty. I should do medical retina. I should do whatever. And it's just, yes, it can be the case for, like, you know, an occasional person, but you know, there is a trend. I'm like reading this way more often than I expected. You know, do you think that these people, just these like young guys, the young residents, need more guidance and kind of like, you know, so that they persist and try more and like, you know, do like, you know, better technique and like, you know, in order for them to find the surgeon within them or like, you know, just give up?
Well, I think the most important question is look in the mirror and say, what do I want? If you could achieve it, would you want to be an anterior segment surgeon or whatever type of surgeon? Would you want to do this? Yes, for sure. Well, then there's already your answer. So you know where you have to go. You have to become this surgeon. But it's just not easy. The path is hard. No one's born knowing microsurgery. My first phaco took me an hour.
No one's born to know how to throw in a 10-hour nylon.
Nope, not at all. But you know what? Practice makes a heck of a difference. It makes a huge difference. And then doing it both hands. And this hand forward,
yep.
And this hand, and this hand back, hand back. Can you do it? And despite all the surgical simulators, we've seen amazing ones. We've used the IC simulator at UCLA for more than a decade. In India last week, I saw this simulator from Help Me See. Help Me See is an organization that was funded by a billionaire who invented flight simulators.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and then now there's a surgical simulator, which I tried, which has real-time feedback, and it's 3D. It looks amazing. And that's a fantastic simulator. But you know what? Still nothing beats 10-0 nylon under a microscope in the wet lab, suturing a grape, a tomato, whatever.
Very easy.
Right? Cost of entry is very low. You can even buy one of these tabletop microscopes on Amazon for $100 US. And obviously, you have the 10 or 9 on, you have the suture set, and the grapes, I'm sure you can find a grape or tomato. So you don't need a $250,000 surgical simulator when you have this. And you think, well, that's not cataract surgery, but more importantly, it teaches you to use your hand under scope.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you want the extra credit question, once you can do the 10-10-10, 10 sutures of 10 on nylon in 10 minutes, the next question is, of the standard 10 on nylon, how many sutures can you throw with the one suture material? How many knots? Now, this is a combination of how much suture do you waste per throw? Do you handle the needle with respect so you don't dull it? And then that, I won't give you the answer to that one. You've got to tell me. challenge thrown out there. Let's see who accepts.
Challenge accepted. Yeah,
So my advice is for the young people, don't give up. Right. Don't give up. If some of you've come this far in your career, in your life, it's not been easy. When you were in high school, everyone was competing. You ended up top of the class. Same for your college, same for your medical school. You got one of the coveted ophthalmology residency spots. You can do it. You have to do it if it's what you want. And my advice is don't give up, just work harder. And again, think about me and throwing basketball free throws. I'm not that good. It may take me a month. But I promise you, I will win. I will sink the 10 in a row. So you have to have that same drive and determination that you will do this. And honestly, in my life, I promise I'm not that smart. I really am not. But I'm really hardworking. And I think that ultimately is far more important. And so how many people do you know you could tell them, I want you to make a 5-minute edited video every day for 2,000 days in a row? Who's dumb enough?
Everybody's going to give up after a week or two.
Well, you know what? Here you go. I already hit 2,000. And so, again, it's all about the hard work.
5 years.
Yeah. Basically, we're in our 60 already. So it's all about hard work, and you can do it. So don't give up. No, especially the young people who are learning. And I know that training programs aren't the same. Sometimes we're lucky. Like, I had a great residency training program in the U.S. But you may say, well, I'm not in the U.S. I'm in this country, and I don't have such great training, and I don't have all these men. I understand. Maximize your opportunities for what you do have, and then seek ways of improving yourself. And always remember, even today, what I do, I didn't learn residency. I learned on my own afterwards.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, don't give up. No way. Have that faith. You can do it. Email me. I'll give you advice.
Yeah, those words of wisdom from O'Day are invaluable. And I can testify to that personally. And, O'Day is a hero of mine, and I really think that what I learned from him in the operating room watching his videos is only part of what you can learn from him as a person and as a life mentor. And thank you so much for
you're making
doing
me blush.
This amazing work, like for all of us, yeah. For thousands of us out there. It did change the way we practice. It did the change the way we look at things, at work and at life at the same time.
Yeah, and honestly, it made me a better surgeon. As you know now, probably half or maybe slightly more than half the videos I feature are from other surgeons. And I learned so much. I've got a video coming up from a surgeon in Thailand who has such an innovative way of doing like a scleral fixation with proline, but without doing those burnt flange ends.
Okay.
It sounds to me, it's coming in December, coming next month.
All right.
So by the time this podcast airs somewhere in December, the video should be out there. But I learn, again, every week by the videos that are submitted to me. And if you send me a video, especially if you follow the directions, on cataractcoach.com there's a link to submit your video. If you follow those directions, I promise I will watch your entire video. I watch every video that's sent to me. Maybe fast forward through some of them, but I learned a ton. And there are some amazing surgeons out there. And the nice part is like the ophthalmology is such a collegial, group of people that we share all the time. And now the nice part is too, think about it. The surgeries we share are so easy to share because they're brief, they're through a microscope, so it's easy to record. I mean, if I was doing like abdominal surgery, maybe not so much. or orthopedic or something else. It's just, but microscope surgeries are easy.
You know, Day, what my wife tells me? My wife tells me, okay, I come from work. I want to completely forget about, you know, like dissociate.
Sure.
Right? But you come from work and you watch Cataract Coach. How did you manage to make people enjoy this as a leisure activity? I personally do.
I think we do too. I do too. So a lot of people do. But if it's your thing, you want to watch it as a leisurely thing, great. If not, I'm telling you, the investment, though, my idea was that 5 minutes a day will make you a much better surgeon over the course of the year.
Correct.
Because there are just so many good little pearls. You know, like we're talking about today's video. Wait till you see tomorrow's another one. So just such great material that we can all learn from and become better surgeons, because I think that's our passion. We're such a small group of people. The number of ophthalmologists on the planet is such a tiny percent. I mean, we're probably less than 1% of all physicians in general. So we're such a rare breed as it is. And we operate on the most precious sense, sight. Probably among the world's biggest problems is blindness, as we know, especially cataract-related blindness. And as with an aging population, it's what we're going to do more and more and more.
Absolutely.
So, and I don't know how it is in the rest of the world, but in the U.S., I don't think we're training enough ophthalmologists to meet the demand or to even replace the ophthalmologists who are going to retire. The U.S. is still fixed at about 460 residency spots per year for the entire country of, what, 360, 370 million people, which is a pretty small number. And then a lot of ophthalmologists who then are in practice, you know, have a work-life balance, maybe don't work, you know, 60 hours a week anymore, maybe they're working 30 hours a week or even less. And so, and then the number of people who are retiring is increasing, so, and then our population, certainly the U.S. is increasing.
Aging.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it used to be a rarity 20 years ago to see patients, oh, you got a cataract patient who's 80-something? And today, like, yeah, they're all 80.
Yeah, I remember right before I left the U.S., I looked at, like, you know, my clinic roster. And like there was a column for age, and there were like 94, 93, 92, 87, 94, 93. So all 85 plus.
Right. Yeah. And then obviously these certain diseases, whether it's glaucoma or macular degeneration, obviously cataract, increase with age dramatically.
Absolutely.
I mean, the percent of people who are 90 years old and have glaucoma versus the patients who are, percent of patients who are 60 years old, it's gotta be at least 10x. And so we've got to get better and better at this. And I think it's an important thing to make that investment. So yeah, going back to the original thing we were talking about for the young ophthalmologists who are questioning themselves, no, if this is something you want to do, you can do it. You just have to be tenacious. You can't give up.
Absolutely, I agree. I completely agree.
So what's next for you? So obviously I like your setup here in Dubai. You're working really hard. And doing this, I'm going to see you at the EPOMEC meeting. We've got some fun cases together. We got a good panel.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very fun meeting. I think we are together on a, like, you know, a complication session. I'm going to, like, talk about one of my complications and see what you think, what I could have done better to avoid it or to manage it.
Yep.
And I think we have some amazing members on the panel, like Boris Malyugin,
sure.
Amar Agarwal. So it's going to be very fun.
Yeah, my case there, I'm showing a case where I would have now done things totally differently, but had a complication, took the patient back to the operating room, just became a very challenging case. And I learned a lot from it. And I want to share that with the audience so you can say, okay, here is me doing something that, you know, I regretted. It was a wrong decision. Here's what happened, but here's how we recovered. I think important to remember, everyone's gonna drop the ball. Everyone's gonna foul the ball at some point, but you gotta be able to recover.
Yeah, like the case that I told you about, it was a very stressful, very very tough case, and the patient ended up seeing 20/20 after a lot of acrobatics and a lot of work in the eye, and the other eye went uneventfully.
Routine case, completely routine.
And the patient tells me, well, both eyes are great, but you know, if only this eye is like, you know, the first one, I would be very happy.
So the patient wants the uncomplicated eye to have the same visual results as the very complicated eye.
Correct. So,
yeah. Yeah, sometimes it works out like that. Yeah, for sure.
Very ironic. Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to have a great time at this meeting coming up. I want to, if you're obviously thinking about this meeting in the future, I'm going to try to come back to this meeting again. I think it's going to be a fantastic time and a great learning opportunity. Please, if you see me at the meeting, come take a picture with me. I would love a selfie.
Yeah, let's take a selfie, so we didn't take one yet.
Okay, yeah. we'll manage that too. But again, love your videos. Please submit me another one, especially any of these glaucoma ones. I need to have more of the glaucoma stuff on Cataract Coach. And yeah, again, I'm still in awe about one. The first time I saw you just fold the foot plate of the clear path in half and then put it through a small keyhole, 2-3 millimeter opening, like, wow. Yeah. I never even thought of that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was like really in disbelief when you saw the video on my like Facebook wall, and yeah. you said, just send it to me as is. Don't change anything. Just send this video to me.
Right.
That was, very
fun. Well, like you, I'm actively watching videos. So in my free time, I'll watch videos, whether it's on Facebook or on YouTube or here or anywhere else. I'm like, oh, I like that. I need to have that on Cataract Coach. And I'll reach out and say, hey, would you please send me that video? I'd love to have it.
Right, right.
Because that's how we, got to gather it all together and learn.
Absolutely.
But fantastic. Well, thank you so much for doing this
podcast.
Thank
you so much, Ode, for having me.
I think it's going to be very valuable for a lot of people to listen to and enjoy. And for people who have a long commute like you used to, podcasts in the car are a saver.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If I had, Cataract Coach at the time, podcast, the drive would have been easier from Miami to Naples.
Oh, awesome. Well, remind our listeners here and our viewers, remember, we got a new podcast every single week. It's on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, anywhere you find your podcast. Plus, it's on YouTube, plus on CataractCoach.com. And also, like Mohammed said earlier, check out the website, CataractCoach.com. We have a full teaching curriculum. If you are struggling to learn cataract surgery, 25-part video curriculum, start at lesson one. Do a video a week, let it digest. 6 months later, you'll be a better surgeon, I promise. Plus the free Cataract Coach PDF book and all the other good stuff. All right, guys, until next time, take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for enjoying that podcast with me. I trust you learned a lot and got some good motivation for you to achieve your maximum potential too. Be a big dreamer and just back it up with hard work, drive, and determination, and you will achieve. Remember, we have a new podcast coming every week with big things that are coming in store. We are doing a lot more international guests. Next week, we're going to have an ophthalmologist from Brazil who's really doing something very innovative to help you become a better surgeon. And then in the new year, we're offering even more podcasts with even more great guests. I think you'll enjoy.